Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today I'll be interviewing Kent Weishaus. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please leave me a review on iTunes or Spotify. What was it like to have a 25-year television production career?
Well, it was exciting at times and tedious at other times. I gravitated into it, leaving theater arts training in college, and went right away into TV, being, you know, a production assistant and then working my way up to production coordinator, production manager, and then associate producer, line producer, then exec producer on my own project at one point. And, you know, I won't lie to you, it was exciting, but in the last 10 years or so, it became increasingly apparent to me that some of the programming I was working on was doing more harm than good for the, you know, the hundreds of thousands or millions of people watching it. So I made a choice to switch careers and to do something more pro-social, more meaningful. And I went back to school and got a master's degree in social work and became a therapist.
That's fascinating to me because it seems, I know this is not in all cases, but it seems that people, if they have a good job and they're making a substantial amount of money, they would continue on that path, although internally they're having a struggle with what is being disseminated and is affecting so many people in a negative way, but they will just continue on the path.
Exactly. You summed it up very nicely. I was having cognitive dissonance. Yes, I was making a good living. And partly that enabled me to walk away from it. I had money saved and I was able to be largely without a serious income for a couple of years, although my wife had begun making a lot of money on her own, so that helped. But yeah, making money is a way of feeling validated in our culture, and there's no denying that the entire cultural umbrella rains that down upon us, and that's part of what concerns me, because whether you're making a lot of money or just, you know, making enough to put bread on the table and a roof over your head, people want to feel proud of what they do. And this can get in the way of looking at the consequences of what you do. Because it's not just TV production. There's a lot of industries that concern me in terms of, putting poisons of one sort or another out into the world. And I think it's important to be aware of how you're making a living and what that's doing. And it's nice to have the freedom to be able to say, okay, I'm going to change this. I know a lot of people don't have that freedom, but it doesn't mean that they shouldn't employ what I call slow thinking about what they're doing.
You know, what did your wife and loved ones think when you said, enough with this production business, I'm going to be a therapist?
Well, my wife is one of my best friends, and I had been confiding in her my unease with the process for a number of years, and it was a slow decision that I finally came to, and she was supportive. I'm pleased to say, partly she makes her living as a singer, as a classical singer in Los Angeles, and those jobs are few and far between, and she worked her way up, and basically she did that while I was working. And so when I went back to school, she had a lot, she was beginning to have a lot of success doing film soundtracks and things like that. And so so it was easier for us to say, okay, well, now we've got your income. I can take these 2 years off to get my master's degree.
How does the imagery that we see on television, how is that really impacting the viewers, especially the young, impressionable viewers, and also the older ones as well?
Right. Well, television and its successor, social media, bombards us with imagery. Back in the 90s, tabloid television was just getting started, and a formula was figured out: bombard people with images that are frequently horrific. It's kind of like driving by an accident on the freeway. You know, your eyes are drawn to it and you can't take your eyes away. Tabloid television figured that out. And now it's just transitioned into mainstream news. Pretty much, I think what I was doing in the 90s is now the norm as far as how people get their news. And so this imagery creates what Daniel Kahneman calls it's a normalizing effect. It is a funny, the word that he uses now escaping me, but it makes the outlying events seem normal, and so that very, very scary things can happen to you. Availability, that's what he calls it, the availability heuristic. What outlying events, fairly unusual events, now seem normal. They're happening all the time, all around me. And so it increases my fear, my anxiety, as well as deeply influencing my beliefs that these things are happening far more frequently than they actually are. And so this is what's available to me, and this is what makes up my world, and I come to believe it.
Now, what inspired you to write your book, Stop Breaking Down?
Well, I am a therapist in private practice, although I'm semi-retired. I work a couple of days a week with clients. When the pandemic began, I was going to begin working less. However, that all changed because there was a lot of demand, and the ease of going to therapy became much more available in that it's now online. Teletherapy meant I didn't have to go to my office, but more importantly, clients didn't have to get to me in my office. So as that happened, I saw around me a great fracturing of belief systems during that time, and I wanted to come to some greater understanding of it. And so essentially my own therapy during the pandemic to some degree was writing this book. And then when it was finished about a year ago, it seemed full of valuable ideas, and I rewrote it to make it more available to people. And I guess I just feel at this point in my life I have some wisdom to share that might be valuable for others, rather than just keeping it in my own vault locked up.
True. And you mentioned the fractioning of belief systems. Was your belief systems challenged during COVID as well?
Yes, and leading up to it, I, for lack of a better word, I guess I was gobsmacked by how divergent and far out mainstream beliefs were becoming. And I wanted to try and come to an understanding as to what led us to that, or what was sending us down that path. And some of the things that I wanted to really reach for this, and to actually explore human consciousness, human self-aware abstract consciousness in the world of great sensory, tactile, and narrative stimulation, where we're overwhelmed, as if you're in an urban or a suburban environment, you're overwhelmed by sights, sounds, smells to begin with, not to mention social media, TV, throwing ideas instantly around the planet that come right into you. And so our self-aware, again, abstract thinking abilities have been a great strength to us throughout history. We see that they have allowed humanity to collaborate and create cities where many of us can live together, with skyscrapers and telephones and automobiles and eventually TV and social media. For better or worse, this is what we have been able to do, collaborating in our ability to share distortions, to share cognitive distortions are looked upon as negative things, but in fact, I would argue that collectively, we believe in these things that don't really have a basis in physical reality. Corporations, green pieces of money, paper is money, governments, constitutions, these things we all agree on collectively, and they become our common and more or less the beliefs. But then we see a great fracturing of this happening. And I theorize, to some degree, due to social media, to some degree, due to possibly the reversal of redistribution of wealth that we saw earlier in the 20th century. But that's another story.
Yeah. And so our abstract thinking, years ago and throughout history, was extremely beneficial to us up until today. But since social media, do you think our abstract thinking has taken a hit?
It remains to be seen. Social media is a tremendous strength also, in that now information that you used to have to travel miles to the library to look up is instantly available to you with just a couple of keystrokes in a search engine. So I don't want to paint it as entirely negative, but it has somehow allowed that we have gone into our own echo chambers of belief systems that have no commonality with other belief systems right next door. And so so it remains to be seen what's going to happen with that. And I'm not saying that the great melting pot of the 1960s, 70s, where everyone got their news was perfect, because certainly people of color were greatly marginalized and excluded in those arenas. Now things just seem to have gotten polarized and very extreme.
What are some ways that, you know, the 21st century systems, you know, affect our biological and mental processes?
Well, I theorize in my book that there's an overwhelm, that we if you look at the recent history, the last 120 years, you know, the end of the 19th century, there were no cars. There were no movies, or at least very few. Movies were just really strange once-in-a-lifetime events you could attend. There was no recordings, telephones. Pictures had begun to be used in newspapers. And so we jump to 1920s when radio becomes common, and then the end of the 40s when TV becomes common, and films, you know, now transition from silent films in the 1920s to talkies, and now of course we have, you know, surround sound effect with films that you feel like you're actually involved, not to mention virtual media, and so it's just been about four generations or so that it's been a complete turning upside down. It used to be that ideas were shared through either one-to-one discussion, theatrical events, you know, meetings perhaps, and then and reading. Certainly reading was a big influence on that. But people only became literate in the last few hundred years to be able to exchange ideas that way. So now we've got instant exchange of ideas bombarding us all the time. And I fear that developmentally and perhaps evolutionarily, we may not quite be ready for this.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I'm thinking along this line. I think it's important to have some resistance and be able to overcome it early on and into adulthood. I think is vitally important for the chicken to have to peck his way through the egg.
Oh, interesting.
And if you don't have that, I believe it could do you a disservice when you run into a block, say when you're 22, 23 and outside of the home, and this is foreign. What do you do? Mm-hmm. I've never had to pluck my way out of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the end.
Right. That's a very good point. Being overly protected can have an opposite effect. We all go through challenges, whether we're poor and marginalized or affluent. We all go through challenges. What I would like to see is family or caregivers or social groups being supportive of those going through early challenges, as you point out, that what may work against people is being told, being demeaned, being dismissed, being invalidated. And to have support and when you go through a challenge, whether you're successful or not, I think is important. And all too often, I think we live in a system that is just eager to marginalize, invalidate, and people going through challenges. So there you go.
Yeah. Sure. What social media platform are you most prevalent on?
Well, I try and maintain a diet of social media platforms. I'm sort of old school. I have this walled off Facebook account with some colleagues that I dip my toe into for, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes, 3 times a week. And I'm also on LinkedIn because I'm told that's a good way to get the word out. And then I have my website, kentw.net. I do certainly I do a lot of searches on Google, but I'm not really that active on in social media on purpose. All of my news comes from reading. Now and then, if I want to get a flavor of what's going on in that a lot that's influencing a lot of people, again, I'll put my toe into certain websites, both progressive and reactionary ones, and try and get the point of view that's being disseminated. But I try and only get my information from reading, by and large.
So a good way to get in contact with you is through your website, most likely.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Great. What is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
The main point of my book is to encourage people to think about their thinking, to try and put distance between themselves and their thoughts, or systems that are influencing their thoughts. And these systems can be both internal as well as certainly a preponderance of external ones all around us. And to employ whatever way you can to try and step back and ask yourself repeatedly, is this a story I'm telling myself? Am I allowing that distortions are creeping into my thinking and influencing me in ways that are not helpful, and the people around me and the culture around me that are not helpful? So what Daniel Kahneman calls slow thinking is what I would encourage.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.